Welcome, everyone. Please note today's call is being recorded. Please stand by.
Thank you, everybody. This is Reba Winkler at the National Quality Forum, along with Suzanne and Jane, the project staff for the Perinatal Endorsement Maintenance Project. This is the conference call for work group number 2, and if I believe we've got the 5 members of the work group. In a second, I'm going to ask you to briefly introduce yourselves to each other, and, of course, when we meet in 2 weeks, we'll have a chance to meet each other in person. The purpose of our call today is to go over the preliminary review of 5 of the measures that we are discussing. Thank you all very much for having done your preliminary ratings. We've got something from each of you. I think that will provide a good starting point for discussion. And our goal today is to really see where people agree, where people don't agree, where there might be some questions or issues, see if there are areas that need clarification from the developers or others, and really make sure that we're ready to go into the in-person meeting, able to discuss each of the measures against the measure evaluation criteria, and be able to focus in on the issues that are particularly important, where there's general across-the-board agreement, we can be more expeditious in our evaluation. So that is our purpose today. I think the materials that you need are really access to the measure evaluation forms. So however you find it's useful to access them, whether it's if you've printed them, whether you've got them on your own computer, or we do have them showing on the webinar, those will be the documents we're using today. So I think at this point, I'd like to ask each of the folks in the work group, just introduce yourself briefly to the rest of the group. I will tell you that this call is being recorded. There are several other members of the steering committee from other work groups listening in, as well as this is an open and public call, so we could have other folks joining us to listen to the discussion as well. So in terms of just brief introductions, let's start with Joanne Armstrong. Joanne?
Hi. Yeah. Good morning. It's Joanne Armstrong. I'm my senior medical director and the head of women's health at Aetna, and a board at OBGYN. I practice at Baylor College of Medicine.
Great. Thank you, Joanne. Jennifer Brandenburg?
Hi, I'm Denny Brandenburg from Decatur Memorial Hospital. I'm the director of Women and Children's Services.
Great. Thank you. Bill Callahan?
Hi. I'm Bill Callahan. I'm a obstetrician and gynecologist and preventive medicine specialist, and I work in CDC's Division of Reproductive Health.
Great, thanks. Andrea Gelzer?
Hi, I'm Andrea Gelzer, and I'm Corporate Chief Medical Officer for the AmeriHealth Mercy family of companies, and we are a managed Medicaid entity in several states.
Super.
And I'm an internist by training.
Okay, great. And Jaleel?
Hi, I'm Jaleel. I'm a neonatologist from UT Southwestern Medical Center at Dallas. I'm the medical director for the neonatal intensive care unit over here.
Great. Thank you all. Okay. I think that I hope that you've all received from Suzanne the results of the preliminary ratings that you all have done. This is both in a Word document as well as a spreadsheet. The spreadsheet, I think, gives you the sort of overall summary view of how all 5 of you felt about the criteria. Hopefully, having done this, you're now familiar with the criteria. And so what I'd like to do as we go through each of the measures is just whoever the lead discussant is to just briefly talk about important points for the major criteria or any areas where it seems to be differences of opinion. So we're going to start with measure 480, which is exclusive breastfeed feeding. This measure is from the Joint Commission. This measure assesses the number of newborns exclusively fed breast milk during the newborn's entire hospitalization. This is a measure that was endorsed previously in NQF's 2008 perinatal project, so it is up for maintenance review. Also, This Joint Commission has taken over stewardship of this measure from the folks at the California Maternal Care Quality Care Collaborative. So, Joanne, I believe this measure is yours.
Okay. So I wasn't on the prior call. So the format is to sort of walk through each of these columns, if you will. Is that it?
And then I think that we don't necessarily need to do each and every column, but for instance, we can look at the evaluations of all five of you for the importance criteria. And we can start with that. The first one, of course, is impact. The second is gap. And the third one is evidence. So.
Got it. Okay, so from an importance of exclusive breastfeeding during the hospital period, it looks like the, you know, most of us thought it was high. Jennifer thought it was of medium importance. From an evidence point of view, there is, you know, significant evidence both in quantity and quality about the importance of breastfeeding on infant health. You know, one of the questions I had was the literature is on the importance of breastfeeding on infant health. The measure is exclusive breastfeeding in the during the hospital period. So the inference is, and I guess one is sort of a necessary but not sufficient requirement to continue breastfeeding, i.e. you do it in the hospital before you continue to breastfeed through the 3 and 6 months that are recommended and are part of the Healthy People 2010 and 20 goals. Do you want to, it looks like Jennifer ranked the importance of the measure as sort of medium and the others high. Is the format to sort of explore what the difference of
sure.
that opinion is?
Yeah.
Okay.
See if Jennifer wants to comment on the 1B criteria on the gap. Jennifer, you rated it medium, are also on impact. So any comments on your ratings?
Yeah, I'm trying to follow along here on your spreadsheet. Where are you seeing gap at? I'm looking for
1B is if you look at the column under importance 1B.
Okay. Oh, okay. I see. Okay, first. Oh, okay. Well, part of that was because they had talked about the difference between the initiation at discharge versus, you know, the 6 months after.
Mm-hmm.
And there seems to be a little bit of discrepancy as to which one they thought was more important. And I thought what they were trying to say was that the 6 months is what they were thinking maybe wasn't as important as the initiation piece.
Okay. Comments from anybody else on the committee? So in general, though, with the rest of the work group members generally rated this pretty high in terms of the evidence supporting the benefit of breastfeeding on infant health and long-term outcomes, and all of you felt that it met the importance criteria. So any other comments? Okay. If you have any questions about the measure, we do have the measure developers on the phone with us.
Can I make a suggestion on the spreadsheet?
Mm-hmm.
If we can have all the measures individually listed, it would be better, like grouped together.
Right.
If you have exclusive breastfeeding, all the comments on one below the other, that might be helpful.
Right. On your spreadsheet, you can sort by that column. And that
how
will
do
be
I do that?
But you're right. We should have sent it to you pre-sorted.
How do I do that?
If you look under column K, there's a drop-down menu box, and right now it sounds like select all is checked. If you click on that, you can check select all to uncheck all the boxes and then pick the measure that we're developing.
We're
discussing, sorry. And then
okay.
Okay,
got it. Thank
so,
you.
That will make it a little easier because you're right. You want to look at them all together.
Yeah. Okay, thank you.
Does that work for you?
Yeah.
Okay, so it sounds like there's general agreement on the support for the evidence. There is an opportunity for improvement in performance, and the impact is is solid. So there don't seem to be any confusing or questionable issues around that. So we can move on to the scientific acceptability of the measure, and this is evaluated in two sort of sub-criteria. One is the testing and evidence for reliability of the measure and testing and reliability of validity of the measure. Wrapped up in all of those are the precision of the specifications, the addressing of the exclusions, are they appropriate or not, whether there is any risk adjustment needed or why or why not. So, Joanne, how did you think about the reliability and validity of this measure?
I thought that, let me just pull my notes here, that some of the exclusions in the denominator were perhaps a little bit elusive. One is the exclusion for documented, quote, reasons not exclusive, for not exclusively breastfeeding. I couldn't pull up an ICD-9 list of what those were. I didn't get a handle on how objective those were, you know, flexible palate versus some sort of softer diagnosis, if you will. I don't know if others have comments about that.
Anybody else in the work group? If you'd like, we can ask the measure developers if they have any comment in terms of their experience in using and testing the measure. Anne or Celeste?
Yeah, I didn't know if you were asking us or if you were asking the committee if they wanted to ask us. This is from the Joint Commission, and this is and Celeste Milton is going to answer the question.
Okay, I think you were asking about what the reasons were for not exclusively feeding breast milk. Was that the question originally?
Yes.
Okay. Those are not ICD-9 codes. Those are maternal reasons. We have those listed under the data element, reason for not feeding breast milk. And come to us from the CDC, AAP, ACOG, and A1 recommendations where it should be avoided. For example, the mother is HIV positive. She has active untreated tuberculosis, herpes simplex lesions on the breast, active alcohol or substance abuse. Mother's taking medications where if she discontinues the medications, the morbidity outweighs the benefits of breastfeeding the baby. The mother's on chemotherapy or she's receiving radiation therapy. So they're pretty much all geared towards maternal reasons that need to be documented in the newborn's medical record as a reason for not exclusively feeding breast milk. As far as newborn conditions, those are derived from ICD-9 codes. If the newborn is diagnosed with galactosemia or receives total parenteral nutrition during the hospitalization, they would be excluded. Or if the infant did expire, that infant would be excluded also from the measure. And any newborn that is transferred within 2 days of birth to another acute care facility would also be excluded from the measure, as well as those newborns that were admitted to a neonatal intensive care unit at any time during the hospitalization, they would also be excluded from the measure.
Okay, very good. Thank you.
Any other questions like that, clarifications? So it looks like the work group rated this high on most. There was an occasional moderate for some of the ratings, but in general, that would qualify it to pass the scientific acceptability criterion, and you all agreed that it did. Are there any other comments around reliability, validity, the specifications, the exclusions, as we just discussed? Anything else there that you'd need clarified or? Okay, doesn't sound like it. So we'll move on to the third general criterion, which is usability. And in this, we're trying to get an assessment of how usable is the information to a wide variety of stakeholders, including the public, including policymakers, including purchasers, as well as professionals and providers. So in general, it looks like this group rated it pretty high. Comments, Joanne?
No, it looks like everyone rated highly. My own personal opinion is it's very understandable to the general population. I think translates well into QI efforts. So it's pretty clear.
Okay. It looks like, Jennifer, you rated this one moderately. Was there any concerns that you had?
Well, it comes back to trying to monitor this. I think for my thought was for six months, I think, afterwards, after after they're discharged.
Right. But I don't think that the measure can capture that, although I think that is sort of the more global goal.
I think that was my concern as far as the feasibility of how could you really actually do that and what the feasibility of doing that would be.
Celeste, do you want to comment on that?
Yes, actually, we are only looking at during the hospitalization, but the evidence shows that if they're exclusively fed breast milk during the entire hospitalization, they're more likely to continue on to exclusively breastfeed for the first 3 to 6 months of life, which, you're right, is the overall goal here. If you look at the healthy people goal, it's 75% of those mothers in the hospital that have fed the baby only breast milk at the time of up from birth till the time of discharge.
Concerns, Jennifer, or
others? Unusability or feasibility?
Unusability.
Feasibility.
Okay. So generally, a high to moderate rate, high for most, moderate one, but in general it seems like you feel that it meets the criteria for that. So now we will move on to feasibility. And Joanne, did you just want to start us off and see what others have to say?
Yeah, so from a feasibility point of view, it seems like some of the data elements come from chart review, plus minus electronic and electronic records where they exist. So in terms of the sort of burden to collect the hospital and the cost, that will increase it. And my other concern was about the exclusivity, the exclusion, rather, of the reason for not breastfeeding. It sounds like it is captured in administrative data based on the comments from the Joint Commission folks on the call. So that perhaps is less of a concern of mine now.
Joelle, I think, or no, that was Joanne, I'm sorry. Who else? Jennifer, did you all have any other concerns? I think it's important to clarify, and Celeste, you're probably better than me, but your discussion of the exclusions talked about the maternal reasons are not from ICD code, so that they would not be found in administrative data.
Yes, you are correct. That would be a review of the record or a note that would be placed in the newborn's record if they weren't being exclusively fed breast milk, that there's a maternal reason.
Celeste, it might be useful to just briefly explain how the Joint Commission collects this data for this measure as well as the other four that will come before the committee.
We work through performance measurement systems vendors who provide data collection tools to each one of the facilities that elects to report on this measure set. We verify that all of the data elements have been embedded correctly into the data collection tools, part of them being disseminated to the hospitals. And basically, we work from the data elements that are not administratively derived, and there are questions that we have for each one of the data elements that would require medical record review for each one of the measures. So depending on what the measure is, for this measure in particular, there would be just two questions that you would be asking, and that would be actually three. First, you'd look to see if they were admitted to a NICU, and if it's a yes, then you stop abstracting. Then beyond that, you would look to see if they were exclusively fed breast milk. If yes, then you'd stop abstracting. If no, then you would look to see if there would be a reason documented that would be, as I had mentioned earlier, included in our list of reasons. And if that was present, you'd say yes. If not, then you would say no. And that would be what you would be abstracting from the record. The rest of the information would be administratively derived, like the admission type, point of origin, discharge date, admission date, and birth date.
anybody in the work group have any questions in terms of the feasibility? Generally, you've rated it moderate to high, there were a couple of comments about the fact that it does require data abstraction directly from the medical record. Any other comments in terms of feasibility?
This is Jenny. Do they track in the medical record, though, once they're discharged? I guess that's where I'm confused. I understand, like, a discharge and the initiation and all of that, but it's the 3 to 6 months out. Are they tracking that in their medical record somewhere, in the hospital medical record?
No, that's not the goal of this measure. This measure is strictly looking at exclusive breast milk feeding during the birth hospitalization. However, we did talk about 3 and 6 months because that is a longer-term goal when you look at the evidence. But more importantly is the evidence shows that if the baby is exclusively fed breast milk during the hospitalization, they're more likely to continue to exclusively feed breast milk at 3 and 6 months. Even a single feeding of formula or water will in many cases undermine the continuation of exclusive breast milk feeding to those goals that are out there nationally. So it's very important that we look at this during the hospitalization. We can make a big difference in reaching longer-term goals, but this measure does not look at anything beyond the hospitalization.
Oh, thanks.
Okay. Any other questions from the work group? Do you feel there's any additional information you need to understand the measure or evaluate it against the criteria? All right, so generally it sounds like the work group feels that this is a good measure and you've rated it highly and feel that it should continue to be endorsed. We'll see what we'll certainly have a wider discussion with the entire committee in our in-person meeting. If we're finished with that, we might as well go ahead and go on to the next measure. And in fact, really the next two measures are very much related. 481, first temperature measured within 1 hour of admission to the NICU, and 482, first NICU temperature less than 36 degrees. So we will talk about first one and then the other, but realize the two of them do go together. So I think, Jennifer, these measures were yours. So if we start out with the first one, 481, this is the preliminary evaluation by the work group members. There is some question about whether it meets the importance criteria. So do you want to talk about that?
Okay, well, it looks like Joanne and I put it at a medium. Other three put it at a high.
That was on impact, yeah.
Impact, right, for an importance. An opportunity, though, it looks like three of us put it as low.
Right.
I don't know if this was. I don't know. The opportunity to the NICU within the first hour, I'm assuming it's because they're saying that the opportunity is probably low because of if they're being first admitted to the NICU, there's so many other things going on that maybe temperature isn't the first thing they're checking.
This is Bill, and my rationale for this is that, granted, I suppose there's some subjectivity in here, but only hospitals in the bottom quartile are below 98% for the measure already, and even below the 10th percentile, it's still at 90%. So how far can this needle move?
Yeah, that was my comment as well. The gap is
unless we've got a standard of 100%.
This is Andrea, and I agree. And I also, I mean, I'm sitting here thinking, my goodness, this is a vital sign, and this is a vital sign, and to do a vital sign check within 1 hour of admission to the NICU, it also seemed like a pretty low bar measure to me. It's an important obviously it's important, but it's very low bar.
Okay. I would. This is Jaleel. I'm from UT Southwestern. I would disagree with the first person about the feasibility of doing this in the first 1 hour, because this is one of the most important vital signs, and keeping the temperature up is very important in the neonatal unit. So this will trump any other things that we are doing in the NICU.
I don't think it's not important. I'm just trying to figure out why. Oh, I mean, do we think it's because to me it wouldn't be a low opportunity. It would be everybody would already be doing it. So I guess, and that's kind of what we're saying. I think this has already sort of been done, and the measures are already good. So. Are we saying we don't think it's important simply because everybody's already kind of meeting the measure already?
But since it is linked to the second measure, I think it is still stays important.
Well, I wonder, do we know historically, you know, historically was it important to measure it to get the performance up there, and now it's there, it's maybe less relevant?
That's a good question. Do we have the measure developers with us? Maybe not today. Beth?
I'm sorry, were you calling out to Beth?
Yeah.
Beth, your line is open.
Suzanne?
Hi, Beth.
Can you hear us?
Yes, we can hear you.
Okay. Sorry, we've been talking, but you couldn't hear us at first.
Okay. Did you want to respond to the question about, you know, what has performance on this measure been doing?
Well, I mean, clearly, I mean, the data show that most hospitals are doing this, but the thought being that if hospitals are not doing this, that it really is a quality improvement indicator. So that's, I mean, that I agree it's pretty low bar, but it does marry with the other measure, 0482, and the two together are key indicators of how well the hospitals are doing with regard to, measuring temperature and assuring temperature is maintained.
I agree with Bill. This is Jaleel. It is an important measure, and we have to be 100% with this. I mean, even if it is 95%, it is not acceptable.
I guess a question that we could, as we discuss both of these measures to keep in the back of our mind is, do we need two measures, or is there some way that we can package the concepts into a single measure and perhaps address some of these issues? So it sounds like there really is a difference of opinion among the work group members in terms of the gap for this measure, because there was a real split among the work group members in terms of whether this measure meets the importance criteria. I think that this will be an important one for the entire steering committee to really get their hands around so we can determine whether this measure goes forward or not. Again, this is a measure that was endorsed 3 years ago and is under maintenance review. In terms of trying to understand, are there other questions or other information that work group members think they would benefit from to help either when we're talking to the entire steering committee or to help yourselves understand?
Yeah, one of the – this is Joanne. One of the things, I mean, the reason why I rated it low was because the gap seemed very small, not that it's not clinically important to take this vital sign. And because the companion measure, less than 36.5 degrees, is there as well, and it says the first temperature should be that, it's sort of, you know, in my sort of head I link the two, that the first – temperature should be taken, and it should be less than 36 degrees. So can we look at the data that's available in that second measure and see of those who don't meet that measure, how many of them have have not taken a temperature at all?
Let's ask our measure developers if they can respond to that question.
In other words, both questions may be asked in the second measure if you just display the data.
I mean, if you're asking whether or not the two measures can be combined, I don't think there's any question they certainly could be. The way we currently report it in the network is we're trying to get at the point that, you know, if you don't measure the temperature at all, you have one sort of problem, and if you do measure it and you have temperature not being maintained as appropriate, then that's a different sort of problem. So that's the way we've been reporting it, but there's no question that they could be combined.
This is Jenny. I agree. I kind of think that if they were combined, it might be a better measure. I mean, cause that's really what you want is not only did they take it, but was it a good temperature as well?
Yeah, this is Bill again, and I sort of thought that perhaps it's kind of implicit right now in the way the two measures are separated, and if there's a way to make it explicit by combining them might just be a funniest way of doing this.
This is Andrea, and I would echo that as well.
This is Jaleel. I agree with that, too.
All right. Well, it sounds like there's sort of movement in that direction, that perhaps the 481 measure on its own may not be all that strong and robust, but that measure 482, which we can go on to discuss, which is the outcome measure, could incorporate the measurement as well, and perhaps reduce the overall number of measures and make for a strong single measure. So if the group would like, we can go and kind of move on and look at 482.
This is Jaleel. I had a question about the denominator exclusions.
Okay.
It says one is infants outside the birth weight range of 500 to 1,500 grams, which is okay. The second one is the one which I had question about, outborn infants admitted more than 28 days after birth. So why not say outborn infants, because they are not going to come into your NICU within the first 1 hour.
The reason the way the measure works is we would expect that even an outborn infant who, of course, is not not going to be there within 1 hour of birth, but it's important to take the outborn infant's temperature, because what we've observed is that outborn infants in particular have a problem with temperature control.
Mm-hmm. Yes, I agree with that. Okay.
Do you have your question answered, Jaleel? Or are there
Yeah.
Okay. Were there any other concerns about this measure on 41 that are unique and unlikely to be part of 42? Okay. So perhaps we can look at 482, which is the outcome measure, the temperature less than 36 degrees. And Jennifer, I think this was also yours. So in terms of, and on this one, the entire group did rate the importance criteria highly, with high to moderate ratings on all the sub-criteria. Do you want to make any comments about the measure?
I'm not really sure why I got a medium on there, because it should have been a high. I don't know if I just accidentally clicked the wrong thing or what.
Okay.
But it should have been a high.
Okay. Any other comments? I remember seeing somebody had a comment about the definition, why the 36 degrees rather
yes,
than...
Yes, that was me, Jaleel.
Okay, great. Did you want to talk a little bit more about that?
Yeah, the criteria as it stands, the measure as it stands is 36 degrees. WHO recommendation for a normal temperature is 36.5 to 37.5. And if you look at the NRP recommendation that also says the temperature should be between 36.5 and 37.5. So are we, why are we picking 36 instead of 36.5 was my question. So are we giving the wrong impression to the outside saying, hey, 36 is okay even though it is hypothermia?
We have a response from our major developers?
Yes. I know that this question has come up a number of times, and at one point we were reporting in Vermont Oxford Network the less than 36.5.
Yes.
And it was called to our attention that, or there was a question, I should say, about whether that was truly hypothermic. So so we did change that, and I'm sorry I don't have all the specifics, but we could get that and send that information to you.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Because if WHO and NRP are saying one thing and we are saying a different thing, then it doesn't sound right. Because we are a part of the, our institution is a part of the Vermont Oxford Network, and we do get the temperatures displayed, split out into less than 36 and less than 36.5, both. So I don't know if there is a feasibility difficulty with this, and that's why we chose 36, or whether it is for convenience.
Any comments from the developers?
Again, I'm sorry. I'm going to have to defer that question for now.
And, okay.
All right.
And send information to you.
Okay, that would be great. As soon as you can get it to us, we'll share it with the work group and the committee. That would be important. Okay. So there is that question on the target value, but otherwise, I think the work group felt that this was an important intermediate outcome measure. Or were there any other issues aside from the actual value? Okay. Then in terms of scientific acceptability, again, there were little bits of differences. I'm trying to look at a couple of the comments that people made. As there was some question about the number of records that are excluded in the calculation of the measure, and the specification of the source of the temperature, whether it's rectal, axillary, or skin temperature. And then there was some question on conducting the reliability evaluation. So anybody on the work group want to amplify any of those comments?
Yeah, this is Jaleel. This is my question was about the source of the temperature, whether it is axillary or rectal or skin temperature, because various units use different methods to take this temperature, and obviously we know that one is not the same as the other. So we have not specified in the measure whether it is an axillary temperature or rectal or skin temperature that we want. If we look at the data from Dr. Laptuk's paper, which was mentioned in this measure, Dr. Abbott Laptuk's paper did say that the temperature is measured in all three different sites, and some 77% of the units used axillary temperature, and there were some, I can't find it right now, but I got it. 77% in the axilla, 15% was rectal temperature, and 7% was skin temperature. So I would like the members to comment on that.
So the way the definition reads is core body temperature may be measured by taking a rectal, esophageal, tympanic, or axillary temperature.
Okay, but we know that this is not the same. An accelerated temperature is not the same as a rectal temperature.
It'd be recorded differently.
This is Andrea. That sounds like a very excellent point.
This will have to be another point that I will discuss with our neonatologist here.
Yeah. And yeah.
Okay. All right. That would be helpful if you could, you know, clarify that a little bit more for the committee, because I think they're pointing out the precision of the specifications and in implementation that there is a real sort of standardization of process. I think it was, Joanne, you mentioned some concern about the number of charts or the percentage of charts that were excluded. And your comment basically said that there were six.
Oh, I'm sorry. I was on mute. I'm sorry. I was on mute. I have a question back to Jaleel, if you don't mind, before going on to my comment. So, Jaleel, is there a recommendation that the temperature be taken per rectum versus something, you know, axillary? Is there a kind of standard around how the temperature should be taken?
No, there is no recommendation. One of the things that people worry about when doing a rectal temperature is about translocation of organisms because these are premature babies and they are vulnerable to infection with low immunity. Whether we will be translocating organisms because of this damage to the skin, that is one of the concerns that has been raised in the past, but it is not very relevant because these babies are not colonized within the first 1 hour of birth. So many units, including our unit, we do rectal temperatures, and in the last 30 years, we have been doing rectal temperatures. And it's not been an issue in our unit, but most of the units do hesitate to do rectal temperatures. So, as you see from the paper, this paper from Dr. Laptev is from the Neonatal Research Network of the NICHD. There are 16 to 18 centers now who are in the Neonatal Research Network. They are big. Large institutions in the U.S., and 77% of them do axillary temperature. So there is no recommendation from anybody. When you look at the WHO paper, which gives you this temperature, it does not clearly mention whether it should be axillary or rectal, but in one small corner of the paper, it does mention that axillary temperature can be taken. But again, when WHO is doing this, this is on all babies. So term babies getting an axillary temperature versus rectal doesn't make much of a difference. But in preterm babies who are extremely small, it might make a significant difference.
Mm-hmm. Okay, thank you. Yeah, and just my other question for my comment was the percent of the population excluded is 6%. It was 9.3% a few years ago, so it's getting smaller. But I just wondered if there's something about the population that's being excluded that is somehow systematically biasing their performance on the measure.
The primary exclusions, I think, are babies who die in the delivery room.
So I don't think that
systematically biases the measure.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Are there any other questions on scientific acceptability? I think we're going to wait to get see the responses from the developer on the several questions that have been posed to help clarify things for the work group members and for the committee. So as soon as the developers are able to get those responses back to us, we'll shoot them out to you. So in terms of the next criteria, usability, any thoughts there from anybody on the work group? Generally, you all rated it moderate to high. Jennifer, anything specific from you? Okay, I think it's Joanne. You had some comments under usability that about the data elements not documented in the chart or may not be in the EMR. I'm sorry, I skipped a feasibility.
Yeah. No, I just thought it was better for QI purposes and sort of a public's understanding of quality per se.
Okay, but you still rated it moderately usable. I think my experience among public representatives, and we do have several consumers and purchasers on the committee who will be able to chime in, but they feel that there are a lot of things that they're quite capable of understanding, a lot of things that perhaps may not seem so on the face of it. Okay, so usability seems okay, and let's move on to feasibility. Again, everybody rated it high with the exception, I think, of Joanne, and you had the concerns about the data elements being accessible in an EHR. Did you want to talk a little bit further?
Yeah, and it just simply that whether there are any EHRs, if hospitals have them, and then, again, from an administrative perspective, from a plan perspective, it's not independently measurable.
I know, this is Joe Carpenter again at Vermont Oxford. I know that we discussed with the folks working with the e-measures as this being an excellent candidate for inclusion as an e-measure. It currently is not, but it's our view that would be an excellent candidate for that.
Okay. And just another one of the myriad of things that's going on. Over the next couple of years, NQF will pretty much require measures being submitted to have the e-measure version, and to that end, we've just launched a measure authoring tool that helps developers create the electronic data elements that match their measure and produces both a machine-readable as well as a human-readable form. So we're really in transition of that expectation, and so while we don't require it now, certainly on the next go-around, we would want to see that e-measure has been created for all of these measures. So it sounds like the thinking and support for an EHR version is there, and making that transition using the measure authoring tool is something that can be accomplished. Okay, are there any further questions or clarifications on these measures on temperature for the developers, since we're going to be expecting some responses to the issues you've raised?
This is Jenny. I just have one quick question. For one of the exclusions, it says infants whose temperatures are not measured within the hour of admission to the NICU. So any baby that did get admitted to the NICU, which is kind of the first measure about getting that temperature actually taken within the first hour, is if they didn't get it taken, they're not in the second study. Is that am I understanding that right?
That's correct.
So in combining these two, we're going to include them again.
That's correct. Yeah, they would just be temperature not taken as a response.
So just this is Rita, just to clarify, so in a combined measure, you a provider would not meet the measure if they didn't take the temperature or if the temperature was less than whatever target we land on, less than 36 right now. And I would think for QI purposes, you could break that out because of the data elements.
Yes. Yes, we could definitely do that.
Any further comments from the committee on a combined measure? Okay. So I think we've pretty much exhausted the discussion on these two measures, and I want to thank our folks from Vermont Oxford for joining us today and helping the work group understand the measures. We're going to do two more. The next one is measure 483, and that is the proportion of infants 22 to 29 weeks of gestation screened for retinopathy of prematurity. So it's those premature infants who were in the reporting hospital at the postnatal age recommended for ROP screening by AAP and who received the retinal exam prior to discharge from the hospital. So, again, focus on the very premature. And, Andrea, I think this measure was yours. Do you want to start out by talking about the importance criteria?
Sure. Intern is talking about the most clinically relevant measure or clinically detailed measure. But anyway, it was. I think there was general agreement that the measure is important. Well, actually, we all said it was of. Hang on, I got to get my spreadsheet the right way. I'm not over there. So we all said it was of high importance. I think, Jennifer, you said it was of medium importance, but I think generally we all agree that it is an important measure. And then in talking about the gap there, the data that was presented on the 1B as to the opportunity for improvement, the evidence has not been published. Although there is a survey that Vermont Oxford Network continues to do, and it does appear that there is a gap according to that data. Am I summarizing that correctly?
I'm sorry, I'm just looking for the numbers here.
They're at the 25% of hospitals with the lowest rates of screening, over 12% of all infants in over 22 to 29 weeks, and over 23% of infants at 29 weeks gestation were not screened prior to discharge.
Mm-hmm.
And that was in unpublished data. From the Vermont Oxford Network of 31,401 infants. Now, having said that, this is already an endorsed measure. Is this correct?
That's
is from
correct.
Maintenance review.
This
yeah.
is a maintenance measure, correct. I guess
so,
the question. Mm-hmm.
Sorry.
No,
yeah, so in the report that we did for the measure maintenance, we did stratify that by gestational age, and certainly it looks like that the rate of compliance is quite low.
I think, Jennifer, you rated this one lower on the gap in terms of the current performance. Did you want to comment on that?
I think if I remember right, it was mainly because of the shortage of specialists that could actually even perform this test and whether or not they were available and whether or not they were going to be able to hit all the babies that were necessary. So, I mean, the opportunity was probably going to be the struggling part of it. Not that it wasn't important, but.
Okay. Does everybody feel comfortable that the evidence for the screening and the guideline from AAP on when to screen is solidly evidence-based? Everybody seemed to rate that pretty high.
Yeah. This is Jaleel. I had a question about the inclusion criteria. So it says 22 to 29 weeks, while the AAP recommendation is all infants whose birth weight is less than 1,500 grams or gestational age of less than or equal to 32 weeks. So why only up to 29 weeks, while this is so important that we need to include up to 32 weeks?
Yeah, the actual criteria that we saw, I should say at the beginning that we have a complete denominator for infants 22 to 29 weeks. We do not have for over 29 weeks, but the criteria that we saw in the latest paper from AAP did have a specific recommendation, but there were some, and I don't have that paper in front of me, but there was a caveat with regard to, I believe it was infants over 30 weeks, maybe 30 weeks and over, but over 30 weeks, I think there was a caveat there. And I'd have to get that paper. I could do some research on that and send that to you.
Okay. The AAP guidelines were from 2006. Is that the same thing which you're mentioning?
Yeah, and then I think there was a published revision to that, but I'll have to look.
Yeah.
I guess I want to just expand on your comment about, you said that Vermont Oxford has a complete data set for the 22 to 29 weeks, but not greater than that. That allows you to look at that particular group, but other folks who would be doing this measure, you know, may not be exclusively participating in Vermont Oxford or non-participants could still use this measure in their own activities.
Yeah, I completely agree with that, we need to include what is recommended by the AAP and not just because Vermont Oxford does not have that capability.
Yeah, I mean, I have no disagreement at all with that. And the only thing I was saying is that I think when the measure was originally created, that the thinking was that, you know, we have a complete denominator. But there was this other caveat issue, too, that was part of that, and I don't have to look at that paper.
Okay. But I think the question on the table is why not have a measure that completely aligns with the AAP recommendations?
That's right.
So your response to that would be very helpful for the group at the meeting.
Sure.
Okay. So any other questions from the work group on the scientific acceptability of this measure? You've rated it generally high on both reliability and validity. There is this question about alignment with the AAP in terms of the specifications. Is there anything else in terms of the exclusions or definitions or anything else?
This is Jaleel again. I have a question about the denominators again. So the outborn infants admitted to the reporting hospital more than 28 days after birth, they are not included. So I was wondering why they are not included.
And this is Andrew. I have the same question.
Yeah, that's part of the Vermont Oxford Network eligibility criteria. That is, in order to be eligible for the bond database, the baby, if the baby is outborn, they must be admitted on or before day 28.
Okay, so the same applies over here as well. Most of these kids who are born at 23 or 24 weeks gestation, by the time they reach a different hospital, they might be more than 28 days old. And they have not been discharged home. So those hospitals should be held accountable to this as well, I would guess. So if the baby is born, if the baby is transferred after 28 days, it still should be a measure.
Any thoughts from the measure developer?
I can't disagree with that. All I can say is that in the way the Vermont-Oxford network currently works, the baby isn't tracked if the baby is admitted after day 28.
Mm-hmm. I guess the argument would sort of be the same thing is to make the measure more generally applicable across all potential users and not necessarily just totally network participants.
Understood. I have that paper, by the way. I just have it brought up on the screen. And the caveat I was mentioning, too, is that there's a footnote beside infants 31 and 32 weeks of age, and then 22 and 23 as well, by the way. It's 31 and 32 only.
Right.
And it says, if necessary, so the timing of the first exam based on gestational age. So that was another part of our thinking, but I would say that, this 22 to 29 week denominator was also a key part of our thinking when we set the measure as we did.
All right. Well, having heard the concerns of the work group, perhaps you all can kind of give it some consideration on because these issues will be raised by the entire steering committee at the in-person meeting and I think are significant enough issues in terms of how valuable and useful the measure is. And that'll give you an opportunity to kind of respond to these concerns.
Sure.
Okay. All right. So any other issues on scientific acceptability from the work group? Okay. Then we go on to usability. Again, mostly rated highly by the work group, a couple of moderates in there. Any particular concerns from work group measures or members? Sorry. I guess the question is that one of you mentioned sort of tangentially, I think, that this measure is probably heretofore been used only, by the participants in the Vermont Oxford Network, which is more focused on quality improvement rather than accountability. And I guess I want to ask the developer your thoughts, or do you know if there are particular participants or other folks who may be using this measure, not just internally, but for part of their, for an accountability purpose?
Well, I'm not clear myself on what you mean by that.
Well, either public reporting or paper performance or credentialing or, something like that.
Well, we have reason to believe that that's the case. I don't have any data to support that, but I certainly heard that from surveys that we have done that members do use Vermont Oxford data for public reporting. For state collaboratives, for example, is another use where states may be involved in quality improvement or accountability. So I can't support that with data, but just from what I've learned in my position.
Okay.
This is Jaleel.
Sorry. Now, I'm just going to add that I'm a statistician, so that's my position. So that's how I've seen that.
This is Jaleel. I'm not a representative for the Neonatal Research Network, but our institution is a part of the Neonatal Research Network of the NICHD, and we do collect this measure in all the 18 neonatal centers of the network and publish that data.
Okay. When you say publish, where is it published?
It is every few years the data is published, and I'm not sure whether they have it on their website. I'm not sure. We do get the data from all the 18 hospitals because we are a part of the center, but I'm not entirely sure whether they publish that on their website.
Okay. We'll see if we can search it out and find out for sure or not. That would be important to know.
Yeah, and I can check it from here as well, from our representatives over here.
I appreciate
that. And Vermont Oxford also reports that data, but I'm just not sure in terms of its, you know, how different people are using the data.
All right. If there's anyone else at Vermont Oxford that might be able to address that question more specifically, I think it would be very helpful for the committee to understand how it's used beyond just the traditional network. Okay, so moving on to feasibility, this is one everybody's rated pretty much high across the board. There's one or two moderate ratings, but generally high. Does anybody want to talk about issues around feasibility for this measure? Okay. So generally, I think everyone feels that it meets the criteria. Does anybody else have any final questions about this particular measure to share with the group or question the measure developer? Okay, this is Raven. I'd like to ask the folks from Vermont Oxford, do you collect any data on whether the baby received the actual surgical treatment, if indeed their screening?
Yes, we do.
Okay. I think, you know, as something to think about, that would be a particularly interesting measure of performance to extend the idea, okay, you screened them, that's good, but then did you act upon the screening in an appropriate and timely fashion as a way of really trying to strengthen this whole area, which is very important for premature babies, but to really understand the performance is appropriate response to screening.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Okay, to the rest of the group, we'll move on to our last measure, which is 484, which is proportion of infants 22 to 29 weeks treated with surfactant who are treated within 2 hours of birth. And Jaleel, I think this is your measure, correct?
Yes, that's right.
Okay, why don't you help the group get started discussing it and start with importance?
Okay, I think I'll be going all around with this, but at the outset, I want to say that this measure, the way it is measured right now, is not suitable for endorsement. So 5 years back, or even 3 years back, routine management of these babies who are less than 28 weeks used to be intubate in the delivery room, give the surfactant as quickly as possible. Now, in the last 5 years, there has been increasing observational evidence that that might not be the right strategy. And trying these babies on CPAP initially and seeing how they do has come into prominence. And in the last 3 years, in 2008, there was a study called the COIN trial. And there was another one which was published in 2010, which is called the SUPPORT trial. These are big studies, multi-center, randomized control trials, which were published. And both of them looked at, one arm was having these babies on CPAP in the delivery room and transferring these babies to the NICU on CPAP, and the other arm was intubating these babies in the delivery room and giving surfactant as quickly as possible. And they found no difference in the primary outcome, which was incidence of BPD and mortality. So there was no difference between the two groups. So there is a move towards using more and more CPAP. So when this measure was initially developed, we did not have this evidence. But now that we have the evidence, which doesn't support the measure, I think it is time to relook at the measure.
Yeah, I think that we at Vermont Oxford are very aware of this work that's been done, and we completely agree that CPAP, initiating CPAP early, mm-hmm. and trying the baby on CPAP is a less invasive and important new approach, if I may say it that way.
Okay.
I guess the thought we have is that if the baby needs surfactant, that surfactant given early, and as Jalil said, that is based on some fairly dated information. On the other hand, I would like to consult with our neonatologist here to answer your concern about it, because I don't think I have the clinical knowledge to really deal with it. So I guess I would just like to know if the committee would consider, a statement from him in this regard.
We definitely want to hear your response to Jalil's concerns. I think that sort of is a fundamental aspect of this measure. If the evidence has changed, and as we certainly can happen over time in treatment, options and practice has evolved and changed, it's important that the measures also keep up. And if that's a basic issue for this measure, we definitely want to hear the response from Vermont Oxford in terms of why you think we should continue using it, or why you are continuing using it, and to help understand that issue. So I think, Jalil, you've kind of brought the conversation to a bit of a halt, because as the importance criteria, which includes the evidence basis for the measure, is a must-pass criteria. It is fundamental. And I think that you've raised a very critically important issue with this measure, and that is the evidence has changed. And so, is the measure still appropriate, or can it evolve with the evidence? And I think at this point we're really going to have to hear back from Vermont Oxford to see what their thoughts are on that. But I think this, again, just raises that these are the kind of really critical issues that we're counting on you guys as steering committee members to point out and raise. Because we do know that measures don't necessarily last forever, and the world around them changes. So I think this is sort of a critical one for this measure. Just to be sure that there aren't other questions for this measure, was there, from any of the work group members, were there any other issues that you noticed in terms of the specifications, definitions, exclusions, or any concerns about the usability, feasibility? Just to be able to address them in case
This is Jaleel again. I know that the Vermont-Oxford network collects the data between 22 and 29 weeks, and that's the reason for the denominator to include 22 up to 29 weeks. And it's a minor point, but the two studies which have been done recently, they have not included 29 weekers in those studies. So that's one of them. And then I was wondering about the other denominator exclusions, outborn infants admitted more than 28 days of birth. Why 28 and why not the first 48 hours? Again, probably it is because of the Vermont-Oxford network's data that it is considered as an exclusion, but generally we don't give surfactant to babies who are more than 2 days old.
Yeah, that's true. We do track when it is given, however, at Vermont-Oxford. So, I mean, I have no problem with that being standard treatment. It's just that outborn babies are not eligible if they're admitted after day 28. And if a baby, for example, were given surfactant on day 21, even though that's an uncommon therapy, we would know that. We would have that information. So,
yeah, it's a minor point, but I was not clear on that because it is very, very unlikely that they would give surfactant after first 2 or maybe 3 days of age.
No, I understand. It's just that we had in our database almost 60,000 very low birth weight babies, 501 to 1,500 grams last year. So, you know, there are some.
Yeah, and the reasons for that are not hyaline membrane disease. The reason is BPD or where people have tried everything and nothing has worked and they're just throwing the kitchen sink. So it's not a good measure if they're giving surfactant at 31 days of life.
No.
Yeah.
Okay. Any other thoughts on scientific acceptability or questions? Okay. Anything on usability and feasibility from the group? Okay. Well, I think we've had a chance to go through the issues that the work group has identified and pose the questions. Again, I thank the folks at Vermont-Oxford for joining us, and we'll look forward to your responses that we will share with the work group and, well, as the entire committee. And certainly these will be the issues to be discussed when the entire steering committee meets. Any other comments from the work group on any of these measures? Okay. What I'd like to do is ask Shannon if anybody who's listening wants to ask a question, any public comment, if there will. So, Shannon, would you see if anybody who's out there listening wants to ask a question?
Sure, absolutely. All lines are open.
Great. Lee or Carol, I know you're out there. Any other steering committee members who might be listening in? Did you guys have any questions you'd like to pose to either the work group or any of the developers?
This is Carol, and I have two questions. One is about 480, exclusive breast milk feeding. I regard this as a very important measure because it applies to such a large proportion of the population and has potentially very favorable implications for both mothers and babies. And I would like to ask the developer if they would consider expanding the level of analysis. The currently issued is facility and national population, and I think it would be really wonderful to ask health plans to get engaged in some pressure around improving practices at this time. And also, I think that state populations could take an interest in this, certainly thinking of Medicaid programs and probably a good deal of variation across states.
Do we still have anybody from the Joint Commission on the line? I think they may have left, but Carol, we'll pass that question along because
okay,
I think it's an important one.
Great. Great. And I had one more question about the retinopathy of prematurity screening. I was wondering if there's a sense of any responsibility toward those newborns who are discharged before the appropriate time for the screening. So, for example, would it be appropriate to include referral on discharge or some appropriate action as a part of this measure?
I think that's a really good question. This is a problem for sure with the ROP. Babies often are discharged before they reach the age that, you know, they're recommended to have an exam. And just tracking whether or not babies have ROP is a problem in many cases. So we currently do not do that. We don't have a question about, you know, was the infant referred, but a good question. I'm not sure whether it would be a separate measure or I suppose it could be included as part of this as a combined measure, for example.
Yeah. Any other questions from anybody else out there? Thank you, Carol. Okay. Well, I think we've had a chance to talk to everybody. This group was particularly efficient, not needing a whole 2 hours to get through everything. What we're going to be doing going forward is summarizing all the comments, and we will be making these available to the steering committee when we meet in person. There have been several need for additional information, which we'll be in contact with the measure developers to do that, get that follow-up so that we can have that for the steering committee during the meeting. Is there anything else that the members of the work group feel that they would want or need to have to be able to present and discuss these measures when the entire committee meets? Okay. So just as a preview for the work group members, essentially what we're going to do is reprise, you know, this conversation for each of the measures when there is, you know, when there are no issues and everybody in the work group has generally, you know, thought everything was pretty good. We can be very concise and very focused. As we go through each of the measures, we will be going through each of the main criteria. So we'll start with importance, raise any issues, and then the entire committee will vote on that criteria. We'll move on to scientific acceptability, raise the issues, discuss whatever, vote, and on all the way through the four main criteria, and then there will be an overall vote on the recommendation whether this measure is suitable for endorsement. So that's what we're going to be doing, and your assignments as the lead discussant for the work group will be maintained for the steering committee meeting. So I'm trying to think if there's anything else I can tell you that would help you prepare for the meeting. Any questions from anybody?
Reba, this is Lee. Mm-hmm. Joanna, I gather, raised the question of the extent to which some of the measures under discussion are entirely appropriate and good for QI, but not necessarily as valid for public reporting. I suspect that's going to come up around several of the measures, and I wonder whether it would be a good idea at the top of the face-to-face meeting to focus a little bit on that issue so that everybody has a pretty clear understanding of what the standards are against which we're measuring.
Okay. We can do that. Thank you. Any other thoughts from the steering committee or from the work group? Okay, well, then thank you all for all the work you did ahead of time. That made this a very efficient phone call, and you'll be hearing from us as we send you out the materials for the in-person meeting. If you're having any issues accessing SharePoint or getting hold of the documents, please let Suzanne or Jean know so we can help you through that. Otherwise, unless anybody else has a comment to make, I think we're finished for today, and I thank you all very, very much for your time, and I look forward to meeting with you in 2 weeks, it looks like.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Everybody.